Time now for the small business panel discussion here on Classic Business. Just to recap briefly, last night we profiled one of the most interesting approaches to enterprise development currently in operation in the local market, Telkom's Future Makers Program. Tomorrow night we're going to discuss the findings of the latest SME survey for 2015 and what keeps small business owners up at night. And then we'll conclude with some issues facing the SME sector across the continent with the African Development Bank and how an innovative new funding structure being proposed by Toby Chance of the DA is starting to gain traction in government. It's all about small business on the Classic Business panels all this week. Tonight we're continuing the ESD focus, or Enterprise and Supplier Development as it's known, with some best practice and advice and guidance on how to use the revised BEE codes to best effect when it comes to developing your suppliers. And if you're a small business, you can access the supply chain, so best listen up. My guests tonight are Keo Baka Mahuma, Head of Africa Enterprise Development at Barclays Africa. Keo Baka, great to have you in studio for a change and not to be interviewing you in the bowels of Emperor's Palace. How are you doing?
Well, thanks, Michael. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And on the line, we have Daniel Hatfield, MD of Edge Growth. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Michael. Good evening, listeners.
And Olga Mishwi, Director of Transcend Corporate Advisors. Olga, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Gilbaka and Daniel, as well as your listeners.
Now, when we talk enterprise and supplier development, and very often we get lost in some of the business speak, there's an awful lot of it around at the moment, but let's call it ESD for short for tonight because we're going to be talking about it the whole evening. It's not a South African concept. It really is a global movement that's proven its ability to stimulate economic growth, to diversify supply chains and create jobs. But Daniel, it's fair to say, though, that in the South African context, this really has become part of the BEE conversation, specifically under the new codes.
Absolutely. I think even if we just take a compliance mindset to begin with, it's a fair whack of the entire scorecard. As you know, it's 40% of the entire scorecard, which is significant. But over and above that, I think what's important to understand is the impact that it can have on the economy if we do it well. And I think we're so fortunate in that the last 5 years of best practice that had been building in the ENSD space, specifically in the South African context, sets us up to make a real difference and also gives us some good leaders as to what we need to do over the next 5 years so that we don't make the same mistakes that we have for the last five.
Now, that's from a compliance perspective. When we look at the spirit of ENSD, as you've called it, Daniel, Keo Baka, what is the spirit of the program? Before we get into the compliance and the technical details, what is really driving this?
So I think about it in terms of the challenges that the economy is facing. We do need to drive economic growth. We do need to drive economic inclusion of people who may have previously not been part of the economy. And in my opinion, the best way to do it is through the supply chains and enterprise development spend of the corporations.
Olga, would you go along with that in terms of the spirit of what's trying to be achieved through ENSD?
Absolutely. You know, we can't be ignorant of the fact that there was a period of time when not all South Africans were able to equally participate in the economic playing field. And so now this encourages organizations, and not just created from a black perspective, but also small emerging entities, to say, if we're going to create jobs within the country, we've got to ensure that we've got a thriving and a growing entrepreneurial base, a thriving and a growing micro economy, and how do we then create links so that those micro enterprises can step into the more formal, more structured macro economy.
And, you know, I also think here that when we're talking about, you know, the spirit of what we're trying to achieve here, I firmly believe that education and job creation is the route to create social equality in South Africa. And even if you don't care about any of those matters, I mean, how long is it that the country's army of unemployed youth will sit by without a future and without any realistic prospects when nothing is visibly changing for them? Daniel, how would you define the role here of big business in mitigating that risk of South Africa passing a tipping point?
Yeah, I think that what the codes have done is they've created a tailwind for us to really apply our minds to what is best practice in this space and then go about executing that. I feel that what corporates have the responsibility to do is firstly to take it seriously and to take it seriously at a leadership level. And to begin with, for me, that's about actually planning. I feel that a lot of corporates at this stage almost dive into it without thinking through strategically what it means to the business in terms of the core value chain of the actual corp we talk about, and making sure that whatever program is implemented or whatever initiative they run is not only sustainable, but it integrates into the actual core of the business, because that's the only way that this is going to be taken seriously and it's going to go beyond just the compliance mindset. So the responsibility in my mind is for corporates to understand the opportunity, to think through it clearly, plan effectively, and then leverage best practice to make sure that they're not making the same mistakes that have been made over the last couple of years.
Keo Baka, being the corporate on the panel, so to speak, you know, there is a strong business case here. How are you approaching it, considering those lessons that Daniel says have been learnt over the last 5 years?
So I think more than the compliance angle to take on this, we look at it strategically from a business point of view. So maybe even before I even talk about our own business, why should big business be focusing on this? Other than compliance, I think one is to strategically diversify your supply chain. The second reason why you would look at it is you could use it to develop your new distributors, so that's on the other side of it. The third bit is you may just want to change your cost base from fixed to flexible. And the last bit is you may just want to become a good citizen. So how we look at it is, in addition to compliance, we consider all of those four factors. We think that is the only way you can drive ESD sustainably and create entities that can be financed. And if you can create entities that can be financed, you've got an engine that can fuel economic growth. So I think the problem comes in when you start looking at ESD as some appendix to your main event. I think you really have to think carefully and strategically how you can integrate it into your business. So it almost becomes an integral part of executing your business strategy, as opposed to something on the sidelines that you just get to when you have time or when you're worried about scoring points.
So for you as a bank, for example, I mean, for the economy to grow, there needs to be a greater number of small businesses, hopefully banking with Barclays and using more of your products and services. And in that way, you're part of this ecosystem and you really are approaching this in a way that is mindful of your role within this ecosystem.
Yeah, so the philosophy that we going towards is how do you create impact just more than banking the client or providing finance? You got to think about the impact of what you do on the broader society. So that's certainly how we look at it.
Daniel, when perhaps medium or smaller businesses who have a look at this and know they have to do it, have to start, where's a good starting point for a business that may not have applied its mind to this point, but now because of the new codes and because of the fact that it is a score of 40 points out of 105, this really becomes a critical area. What's a good departure point?
So there are a number of programs that are available for small businesses to apply to and essentially become part of. But I think the starting point sits with the fundamentals of the small business. And, you know, no small business will survive if they don't have a market which they know which they're serving and how to serve it. They don't have a competitive advantage and they don't set their business up with an operating model that's sustainable and can continue to deliver that competitive advantage. So I think that as opposed to going around and shopping for programs, which I think is often the mindset that small businesses take when they see this opportunity to tap into this enterprise and supply development spend, it really starts off with building a strong business where there's a clear market. Now, obviously, when you talk about the market, that's where you can start understanding where there's growth in supply chains in the corporate economy and where there's likely to be the opportunity for you to get access to that growth. And that can often define exactly how you mold your product offering or your value proposition if you are providing a service. But I think that to start with, obviously, the end in mind around the market is important, but not to look for a free ride and to rather focus on the fundamentals of your business would be, for me, the starting point for most small businesses if, you know, I was wanting to take advantage of this.
And that, once again, does speak to the ethos of what we're all trying to achieve here. And it's certainly not one of handing out fish. It's creating fishermen of those small businesses. Olga, let's have a look. You know, Daniel mentioned earlier that we've had kind of 5 years of learning so far. Let's have a look at some of those lessons that we have learned, because there was a report out published a couple of years ago that said after billions of rands flowing into various ED programs that we hadn't really seen the kinds of returns on that investment that we were hoping for. What are some of the key lessons that have been learned?
Well, I think one of them, Michael, is the fact that you can't just write a check and throw it at a particular enterprise and hope for the best, cross your fingers and just turn your back on them. There needs to be continuous engagement with your particular supplier. But even before you do that, and that's one of the things that the codes are now wanting us to do, is having an appreciation and understanding as to what does that particular enterprise need, matching that against what your business needs so that you can create a symbiosis and a relationship that actually encourages them not only to grow, but also then at the end of the day, you're able to see the return on investment there. In our view, there also needs to be a greater responsibility that these particular enterprises take on as they engage in these programs. To just say that my business strategy is to rely on enterprise development funding, but not to utilize that as a catalyst to actually do my own thing and to not only consider my customers' needs, but perhaps also my industry's needs, my country's needs, and frankly, the fact that we are playing on a global market, how do they ensure that they get to a place where they're going to be competitive on the global field? So by merely just looking on the short term and the direct relationship with the customer, which is important, that can't be the be-all and the end-all with regards to what they consider when engaging in a particular project.
No, certainly competitiveness and productivity have to feature quite heavily in the conversation. I often think that those are two very important overlooked areas when we're talking about small business in South Africa. Keir Buck, I want to come back to the issue of access to finance and funding, because that really is at the heart of a lot of this. What are some of the challenges that you've picked up in the past that need to be worked on in this area? Because very often, and I think I spoke to you briefly about it last week, we have things like guarantees that small businesses that haven't reached significant scale yet might not be able to access. Well, what are some of the key issues to improve that access to finance and funding for suppliers?
Just a few. So what we find is, maybe let's start off by saying, so as a financier, we are custodians of depositors' money. So I think in our before we lend, we just need to make some assessments and to determine whether we think the risk that we're taking is okay before we can fund. So what we find with most small businesses is sometimes even the story that people put across is not strong enough to kind of like swing you to be convinced that it's fundable. Sometimes when you look at it from a traditional perspective, you find there is not enough collateral, the balance sheet is not strong. But taking it back to your comments on enterprise and supplier development, we find it actually is a very easier proposition from a funding point of view if there's a corporate involved in the picture, because you can almost structure the agreement such that the SME gets the funding, but you manage your risk and the corporate also partners with you in delivering the solution. But it's also important. So there's two things to entrepreneurship. So one is there's the business itself that must be viable, but the second bit is the person, the entrepreneur themselves, because business just doesn't happen. It's somebody who makes it happen. So at the end of the day, you need to take a view on the story that's being presented to you, whether it's solid enough and the business plan is believable enough to be able to back it with funding. But as I said, it makes it easier with the enterprise and supplier development initiatives and what the legislation requires of us.
As a professional in that space, within Barclays, now just using it as an example, do you have difficulty in speaking to your colleagues in procurement, for example? You've got enterprise and supplier development goals and aims, and they've got procurement KPIs that they're measured by, and sometimes theirs are just cost, and you have a more strategic outlook, perhaps. Do you ever butt heads, for lack of a better word? I mean, I have spoken to some enterprise and supplier development professionals who say that it is difficult getting the message across to the procurement department.
No, in our case, we collaborate quite a lot. As I said earlier, enterprise and supplier development is quite strategic in our business, not just market facing, but also to deal with all our stakeholders. And the procurement department is one of the key stakeholders that help us to deliver on the mandate.
Well, clearly you chaps are getting it right, and there's some businesses that could learn a lesson or two out there. We just need to take a short break from the small business panel discussion about enterprise and supplier development here on Classic Business 102.7 FM. Welcome back to the Classic Business Small Business Panel. We're talking about the role of developing small suppliers and enterprises through supply chains and how small businesses can get access to that to the benefit of the whole economy. I've got Keo Obaka Mahuma, Head of Africa Enterprise Development at Barclays Africa, in studio with me. And on the line, Daniel Hatfield, MD of Edge Growth, and Olga Mishri, Director of Transcend Corporate Advisors, all part of the panel. Keo Obaka, I wanted to ask you this before the break, but I'll get it out the way now. Where are we in terms of the difference between the sector codes and the generic codes in terms of the requirements for you to comply with things like enterprise and supplier development being 40% of the makeup? Well, you have a financial sector charter, so that would seem to hold sway.
Yeah, look, That's an interesting and difficult question. as it is at the moment, so the codes are out, but the sector codes still have to be revised. So we don't know yet when they're coming out. We understand that it will be in October sometime. So one expects some move towards what the general codes are.
So, in other words, okay, where do you see the situation?
So I'm in the privileged inverted commas position to be sitting on the FSC council that's putting together the revised FSC, and I think that at this stage we're looking at an end of October deadline to publish the Section 9.5 and hoping for it to be in place by 1 January next year. I think that there's very strong alignment between the generic codes and the FSC. Obviously, there are some nuances specific to particularly the life officers and the banks, which will be catered for in the FSC, but certainly there's a strong alignment around the enterprise and supply development pillar. So all financial services companies can expect to be pretty much playing under the same rule set and being driven by the same philosophy as the generic codes when it comes to this pillar.
Because actually that's what you want across the sectors, not just in the financial sector, but certainly you'd think that there should be harmonization or a baseline at least, that all the sector codes would have the generic codes as a minimum, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely. And what they also are doing through the FSC is they're trying to put the onus on the financial institutions to play the role of financier, obviously in a more creative and more customized, bespoke way to deal with this missing middle, as we call it in the economy. So it's not just giving them the generic codes, but also trying to make sure that for the role that they play in the economy, the revised charter speaks specifically to that and, you know, puts the right sort of pressure on them to step up to the plate and play that role effectively in the value chain of ENSD.
Oh, very interesting. Olga, I heard you agreeing in the background there. When one looks at the particular needs within the financial services sector that we're talking about now, I mean, where could you see an improvement from where we are, which is, I think, quite an advanced area of enterprise and supply development? When you look at a lot of the financial institutions who have online portals and, you know, they've got a whole database of suppliers that they can access via these tech platforms, it seems to be they're ahead of other sectors of the economy.
Absolutely. In fact, I had an interesting debate with a colleague of mine today. It wasn't in relation to ESD in particular, but just generally in relation to access that youngsters nowadays have and how success could be said to be in their hands, in the sense that, you know, previously people didn't have access, and so they could then say that they were disadvantaged in a particular way. But now they've got access, and they've got to make it work for them. So similarly, in a space such as the financial sector space, it'll be a question of how do financial institutions creatively, like Daniel mentioned, make these opportunities available to enterprise development beneficiaries, but then more importantly, how do these beneficiaries actually open those particular opportunities of access? My thinking around the creativeness that needs to come in is that there also needs to be an alignment of language and understanding between the donors as well as the enterprise development beneficiaries. With some of the organizations that we provide services to and also some of the platforms that I had the opportunity to speak to, sometimes there seems to be a mismatch with regards to the requirements that, for example, a bank would want from an entrepreneur before they are prepared to give them financing or standards or give them a guarantee or whatever the case may be. And there's no bridge in between the requirements that particular institution requires and where the particular enterprise is. So that's going to be an interesting challenge for me that donors need to overcome if we're going to really, really be able to bring up to speed and bring up to the supply chain those entities that we're looking to grow.
Daniel, are those bridges being built? Are we starting to speak the same language here, or is it still a question of acronym soup and us not really understanding how we will all get to this holy grail and this promised land of increased growth via small businesses mopping up that army of unemployed?
Yeah, no, I think that it is acronym city, as you say, and we struggle to often translate what is almost a corporate market back to the small business and help the small business understand exactly what's required of them to be eligible for funding under this new regime or this new opportunity set that comes with the ENSD codes. So I feel like we're moving in the right direction. I do feel that there's a lot of work to be done actually to more speak to the general corporate in South Africa around what works and what doesn't work. And maybe if I can just quickly give you some statistics which outline the value chain of what successful ENSD looks like.
Mm.
You know, firstly, I mean, we've looked at the last 100 businesses as what we've worked with, and if there's not a rigorous selection process that goes into selecting those businesses for the program, and the incubation that's given is less than, you know, 6 months, we call short term, we actually see negative growth of those small businesses. If in fact there is a rigorous selection process where external experts are tapped into and there's long-term incubation, you see that jump up 40% to an average revenue growth of the underlying SME of 20%. If you then add bespoke finance to that business in the right part of the life cycle, we see in this samples of businesses an average revenue growth of 49%. And then finally, if you're able to introduce access to markets, we see, even though I must qualify, it's a very small sample set of the 100 businesses, we see an average revenue growth of 130%. So you can see, as you add the different layers of enterprise and supply development, you get a value chain that actually works. And so for me, you know, there's definitely positive signs, and it's just a case of almost learning from that and making sure that when we do enterprise and supply development, we focus on those fundamentals.
Keir Baka, are you as sanguine as Daniel is about the outlook and the fact that we've started to see some positive traction with certain programs, as he's mentioned, incubation, and we have the data behind us to now go forward successfully with this next phase?
Yeah, we're seeing similar results where you combine access to finance and business support and access to markets. So we're running about 8 enterprise development centers around the country. We are seeing that the more you support, the more sustainable you can get the results. Even on our access to market portal, which has well over 32,000 SMEs on it, you can see the advantage of helping people, step one, develop, build a business that works, and step two, help them diversify, because that's how you build sustainable businesses in the long run. I think we are all accepting that giving money away, kind of like throwing money at the problem, is not the solution. So you're going to have to take the three pillars together, and we will see the difference. And certainly I would like to say that from what I'm seeing, I think the opportunities in the enterprise and supply development have never been greater, and the new codes are probably going to propel us into an era where we can demonstrate many successes than we have seen in the past.
Well, from your lips, I really do hope that happens and we unleash a wave of entrepreneurial flair into the South African economy that takes us well into the next century. It's exactly what we need right now. That was Keir Baka Mahuma, Head of Africa Enterprise Development at Barclays Africa, and Daniel Hatfield, MD of Edge Growth, as well as Olga Meshwi, Director of Transcend and corporate advisors, talking about the role of enterprise and supplier development within the revised BEE codes framework and some of the lessons that have been learned and how those might be used to transform the economy into the next few years. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a look at what keeps small businesses awake at night. And yes, you guessed it, top of the list is load shedding. But there's a whole host of other issues, and that's with Arthur Goldstuck, amongst others. He's the lead researcher of the 2015 SME survey. So be sure to tune in then. From me, Michael, producer Jono Adams, and sound engineer Mdu Tlele, thanks for tuning in to the Small Business Panel discussion. Have a wonderful evening.